so look if I go home. Am I doing enough for my people? Am I doing enough? Am I doing enough para la gente?
Para la gente.
Para mi gente.
Para la gente.
Para mi gente. Para mi gente.
This is Radio Free Aslan, broadcasting from occupied territory. My name is Ernesto Todd Morales, and I want to welcome all of you to the first Chicano Development Center Roundtable podcast. The year was 1995. Cesar Chavez had died in March. Selena, the beloved Tejano star, had just been murdered. The Lansing community was still smarting from the shooting death of Cipriano Torres in 1991 by the Lansing Police Department. And Paula Gordillo, a young Michigan State University student, had just completed a successful 10-month campaign to have Grand Avenue in downtown Lansing changed to Cesar Chavez Avenue. In June of 1995, 10% of the registered voters in Lansing, a mere 7,959, voted to return Cesar Chavez Avenue to Grand Avenue, sending to the history books the most infamous election in Lansing, Michigan's modern history. The returning of Cesar Chavez Avenue to Grand Avenue was itself a culmination of a larger drama that began unfolding a year and a half earlier around racist stereotypes, shock jock radio, and a community coming of age. For this discussion, I have with me Maria Garcia, one of the participants of the first Chavez Street effort, and Elva Castilla-Reyes, the chair of the committee that is currently working to make this very important name change happen again. Maria, can you give us the short version of what happened in the 1990s? And please make sure to include the roles of Tim Barron and Fred Stackable in your answer.
Sure. I'd like to start out by saying that I wasn't involved in the actual name change. That was Paulo Gordillo, and he was very successful. He had had the very little problems in getting the name changed. My involvement began when Q106 became involved in trying to undo the name of the street.
And Q106 is?
Q106 was the radio station that employed Tim Barron. And at the time, Tim Barron and Deb Hart, I think they were called
The Breakfast Club.
The Breakfast Club, yep. And throughout Paulo's campaign, there had been one person that was kind of the squeaky wheel. His name was Fred Stackable. He was an attorney. His office was on Grand Avenue, and he didn't want to have to change his stationary address. So, but it just never, his cause never took any, never got any traction until Tim Barron and Q106 started to back him up.
So tell us a little bit about that, because obviously, I mean, there's a little bit more to that story. I mean, what caused Q106, one of the largest radio stations in the Lansing area that basically is a market of over, at the time, over 150,000 people, what caused this radio station to begin to oppose this street name change that has happened in countless cities across the country?
Well, it was incidental, I think, because they hadn't been involved at all either. But on Cinco de Mayo, I don't even remember what year it was. I want to say it was 1994. They ran a parody, and it was a really ugly parody about Mexican Americans and Mexicans. And the parody itself came from California, and it was about winning a Mexican. You know, winning the Mexican, they have to clean your car and clean your house and all of that sort of thing. It was very ugly, and the community took offense in a way that I hadn't seen our community react to anything in a long time. And once that happened and the community responded, they were really outraged. We were all very outraged. People take their kids to school in the morning, and they had the radio station on, and the kids heard things like Deb Hart saying, yeah, well, you know, stick them in the wheel well of a truck, or, you know, I think the part of the parody also referred to Mexicans as infectious disease carriers. And so it was incredibly offensive. And so once the community took offense to that, we just got really angry that, you know, mayor got involved and tried to bring peace between the Mexican-American community, the Mexican community, and the radio station. I couldn't understand why. I just couldn't figure it out. Back then, I was working for the local CBS affiliate as a television producer for for WLNS. And so I was at that table, and the producer was there, the general manager of Q106 was there, Abel Sykes, the president of LCC, was at the meeting with the mayor. The mayor was there. Several members of our community were there. And trying to come to some understanding of what had transpired. Why would they do that? There wasn't any really good answer. They just kept saying, well, it was just a joke. It was just a joke. At that particular meeting, Dennis Mockler, the general manager, and the producer, can't think of his name right now, but they both apologized. But the point was that Tim Barron never apologized, and Deb Hart never apologized. And when they forced him to apologize, it was more like, well, I'm sorry, you can't take a joke kind of thing. And so it just wasn't getting any better. And still, Mayor Hollister was trying to get this resolved. And again, I couldn't figure it out because his roots are, you know, he's very deeply rooted with the Chicano community from way back in the 60s. And a lot of the people that he called friend and that called him friend were so hurt. They couldn't figure it out, you know, either. Long story short, there was a campaign to redefine Lansing, and you know, and Q106 was a $150,000 sponsor for that campaign. And so that was where that connection was, why he was so determined to get help okay. us get over it.
Okay, let me jump mm-hmm. in here. So you're working at the local CBS affiliate. You have some knowledge of what's going on or how media mm-hmm. works. And obviously, you know, this is a problem. Q106 mm-hmm. isn't taking it seriously. So you and a couple of other people mm-hmm. decide that you're going to take action beyond what had happened. And so tell us about the action that you started to take and how mm-hmm. that impacted or how that really brought Q106 into this situation.
One of the things that I think our community does really, really well in a time of crisis is we get really angry and we, you know, we're good about raising our fists. But I think what happens too is that fades away. And so what I did with Paulo and Guillermo Lopez, and I'm trying to think, there were a couple of other folks, Kevin Schumacher, a local attorney who was working with us. Our goal was to fill their public file, which every broadcast channel has to have a public file. And I was well aware of that because that was one of my responsibilities at the station. And so the FCC reviews your public file and you know, when you go up for your license renewal. So at one of the meetings with that group, I told Dennis Mockler that when it was a non-issue, when the news wasn't covering it anymore, that was going to be my focus, that I was going to just stay on top of the public file. And so between the small group that was still working on it, it became an international event. We had a Telemundo, I think it was Telemundo at the time, came to Lansing, and it was huge. And we had locutores from all over, you know, Texas and big cities, big markets, that were appalled by what had happened, and they did this national moment of silence, which if you're in broadcast, you know that that's like a huge sin. That's the thing you do not want is dead air, because that's money, you know. And so for them to do this thing nationally, it was a big, big, big deal. So 3 years later, when it was a non-issue to most people, they went to renew their license, and it was never officially announced, but the option was sell it or lose it.
Okay. So you guys were actually mm-hmm. able to disrupt their licensing
right.
Through like a prolonged, you know, pressure, working through like official channels. Mm-hmm. So my understanding is that that Baron, in retaliation, brings on Fred Stackable onto his show, mm-hmm. and he begins to promote this, you know, this campaign that Stackable is having, and it's very directed in saying, if you come to the station and, you know, fill out mm-hmm. these or sign this petition, then we'll give you a free T-shirt or a cup or something. And that being the largest radio show in the area at the time, I mean, Baron was on every day talking about how, you know, Mexicans aren't taxpayers and how they're not citizens and that they come mm-hmm. here and benefit from all of these different things. And so it was really kind of whipping this up. So is this retaliation for that?
Thanks for bringing me back.
It's okay.
It's a lot to remember. Yeah.
It's a big story.
It's a huge story. And so, yes, because of our anger and our response to their Cinco de Mayo parody, yeah, they took Fred Stackable's cause under their wing.
That was going nowhere.
That was going absolutely nowhere.
He had like one signature.
Yeah.
His
yeah.
own.
And so because we were just, we were just relentless in making, you know, we were trying to get Tim Baron and Deb Hart removed from the radio, removed from the on air, you know, from being on air. So it got ugly. And so, yeah, they started a petition campaign to, because they needed the signatures to put this to a vote, a public vote. And they did that through giveaways. He was announcing every morning on the program, you know, come by on your way to work. Just, you know, they had it set up so it was actually like a drive-by situation where you could just come literally drive through, get your free Q106 mug, get your free Q106 T-shirt, whatever it was, the giveaway of the day. And so it started to get some real traction to the tune of however many votes they needed to make it go to.
Actually, and just I'll throw mm-hmm. out those statistics right now. And for those of you that are listening to this that follow electoral politics, this election took place in June. It was in the middle of the summer. It was a special election. The only other thing that was on the ballot at the time was millage. So those aren't, you know, particularly high. At the time, it was Monday, June 12th, 1995. Approximately 18% of the registered voters in the city turned out to vote against Cesar Chavez Avenue. That's 7,959. And 5,257 people turned out to vote for Cesar Chavez Avenue. So, I mean, I think that when you think about this, I mean, it's really interesting because almost everywhere that this has happened, in the cities, are almost overwhelmingly white. You take Minneapolis, Minnesota, for instance, 2% of the population is Chicano. The black population is 7.2%. So, I mean, obviously, this isn't a racial issue in Minnesota and probably shouldn't be here right now. Also with us today, we have Elva Castillo-Reyes, who is the chair of the current effort to rename a street in Lansing after Cesar Chavez. Elva, what can you tell us about the current effort that's going on?
The current effort is going very well. We have a very strong committee. We have moms, dads, grandparents. We have professionals. We have students. We have educators. And we meet every Sunday. And we have been meeting every Sunday since I became chair in, I believe, the beginning of January.
Okay. And so as a result of the election that happened last time, tell us a little bit about some of the changes that the city instituted to kind of keep things like this from happening again.
They have put together, I'm not sure if it was a result of that directly, I believe it is, but there's a memorial committee now, and that is appointed by the mayor. And once you petition to have a statue, a monument, or a renaming of a street, whatever you're petitioning for, it would go to the memorial committee. And they then approve it and send it on to the city council.
Okay, because before there was no process at all.
There was no process, and you did have to petition with, I don't know, how many signatures
right.
they needed.
And I think it's important to point out, too, that when the street signs were taken down in 1995, that they had already been up for a year. Cesar Chavez Avenue was a reality in Lansing, Michigan. The street signs had been put up. The parades had happened. The dinners and all the other things, everybody had a chance to make their speeches. And so it was a reality. And I mean, it was a reversal of what was happening at the time. So what's the plan for Cesar Chavez Avenue now?
The plan as it stands now, we will be submitting our application on Monday, March 29th. And along with the application are signed letters from all of our supporters. They include some of the state representatives, Representative Bauer, Mark Meadows. We have letters from several of the UAW locals here in town. We have letters from the NAACP, A. Philip Randolph Institute, CLU, Coalition for Labor Union Women, LACLA, Labor Council for Latin American Advancement. Just several organizations have offered letters of support. Those will go along in with the application.
Okay, and how does it look?
It looks very promising at this point. From what we can tell, we have at least four for sure votes on City Council.
And how many people are in City Council?
There's actually nine. We only need five.
Okay.
We have been contacted by the mayor. We've had a meeting with the mayor, and he is in total support.
And the mayor's name is Virge Bonero, and I bring that up because he is currently running for governor of the state of Michigan.
He is.
Okay. All right. So things are going good with the current effort. They ended somewhat disastrously in the first effort. Now, my question to either one of you is this. Why should we even name a street after Cesar Chavez? Maria's pointing at Alva to go.
I guess the best answer I have is the one the mayor gave us when he called me and said, why not?
Okay. Oh, that Verge.
But I think
he's a silver-tongued devil.
I think it's time. I think if you look around, things have definitely changed since the original effort went through. But I think there is a different type of atmosphere that we're working in.
Right.
Than what was then. I think it is time. It is time that we did the right thing by Cesar Chavez.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, we're talking about street name changes, and all of those things are good, you know, monuments, memorials, and stuff. But, I mean, the reality of the economic situation for many Chicanos, Mexicanos, Latinos across the country is one of it's dire, right? I mean, we suffer the most deaths and injuries in the workplace. We are among the least educated in the country. I mean, aren't there other efforts that we could be putting our work into besides street name changes?
Our current committee is not just ad hoc committee. This committee, they have committed themselves to work even further. We are a nonprofit organization now. And we have committed ourselves to do the community work that we can do to uplift ourselves, to help people be self-sufficient, to help empower people. Those are the things that we're looking at doing. Some of them have already made suggestions. And I think a lot of it came out of that initial open forum town hall type meeting we had in January 14th, where there were a lot of suggestions. They wanted buildings. They wanted our kids to be educated in school about Cesar Chavez. So we have kind of put that all together, and we are working on coming together and coming up with something that will try to help satisfy everyone's concern that, oh, why do we need a street? Well, yeah, that's just a starting point for us. We're in it for the long haul.
Okay. So the street, having grown up here in Lansing and having lived through the things that happened in the 90s with the street, I mean, the street obviously seems very important to people. But I guess then my question is what do you think is going to happen? I mean, is there going to be a psychological effect because of the street? I mean, I would say that for many of us, it was psychologically damning when the street was taken away or damaging. I mean, do you see this as sort of a healing process, Maria? I mean, how would you describe what's going on here?
I think there's a lot of value in what the committee is doing now, and I really commend Alva and her group because they're doing this in a really organized, strategic way. I think that's the big difference between then and now, on top of the environment, the climate is just different too. But I think that there is great psychological advantage to having the name of a street, especially when you consider, again, going back to the story I was telling you earlier about the kids who heard the, you know, that slam, and they're like, you know, Papi, why did they say that about Mexicans? Or Mommy, why did they say that about Mexicans? There is equal value, that kind of power to be able to drive on a street that's called Cesar Chavez Avenue for, I think, people my own age, as well as children, to be able to say, you know, that's Cesar Chavez Avenue. And it generates dialogue. Well, who was Cesar Chavez? That's important to let people know who Cesar E. Chavez was and what he brought, not just to the Chicano community or the farm labor movement, but to the nation.
Right.
So I think there's a great deal of value, not just in having the street name change for him, but also the other initiatives and other efforts that Alva's team is doing.
So, I mean, why then so much opposition? I mean, Cesar Chavez, great man, American mm-hmm. hero, labor leader,
yeah.
Literally gave his life
yeah.
On behalf of the people, you know, who the union that he mm-hmm. helped to start and that he worked for.
There was an opposition last time. You have to remember, that was successful. That was a successful initiative by Paulo Gordillo. And it was successful. Like you said, for a year, those signs were up. And so I don't believe that the opposition back then was, it didn't have anything to do with Cesar Chavez or Cesar Chavez Avenue. It had everything to do with Q106's retaliation to the community.
To the Chicano community.
Right, to the Chicano community.
So, I mean, in some ways you could maybe say, and if you don't agree with this, mm-hmm. then that's fine. That's good. I know you will. That it really has, that opposition from Q106 had really came from their perception of who we are as Chicanos, as Mexicanos. You know, that they had run this ad and that we should just, you know, accept it and get over it.
It was ratings driven. I mean, I can tell you from being in the industry, it doesn't matter if it's good or bad attention. If you're getting the attention, you're getting the numbers, and that just sends this little thrill, you know, through the general managers. I mean, it was about ratings, and it didn't matter if it was dishonest information, if it was inaccurate information, you know, it wasn't about that.
Okay.
It became about keeping them in the news. It became about the ratings.
Right.
It just really was.
But would you say then that when they checked their FCC file 3 years later that the thrill was gone?
I think the thrill was gone. They did end up firing Tim Barron. Unfortunately, they ended up rehiring him in a different station, but then they re-juggled the format so that he was also, he was doing the, you know, his old format before.
Okay.
But.
And so then one of the questions that we have here that was given to me by one of the producers is he's saying that we see figures like Robert E. Lee, who, you know, fought against the unification of this country, and that there are high schools or whatever named after him across the country, and nobody ever says a word about it, you know. But yet we have to fight tooth and nail to name a street after Cesar Chavez.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how would either one of you respond to that?
I hope that there is no fight this time. I really hope that Elvis' team is successful doing this. I really do believe that the climate is different now.
I have the same hopes that Maria has. We will soon know one Monday when it hits the city clerk's office, and the media will be there, and we'll see what the response will be. When it initially hit the paper last summer, I was in the first group that got started, but there was some opinion letters, those sorts of things that were negative. But there weren't a whole lot, and we haven't heard a whole lot since. But we'll just see what happens on Monday when the media has us on the news turning in our paperwork.
Okay. And so, I mean, the point then being, and this is what I'm taking away from this conversation, is that during the initial event that happened, that there really wasn't any opposition from the community at large, and that what happened as a result of this street name being changed was really driven by, well, I would say, like, ego and a desire for fame and ratings. and it became a struggle between you know, this man, Tim Barron, and his inability to just accept that what he did wasn't very funny. It's interesting. I think that what's really interesting about that is that I think over the years that this these two events have become very separated in people's minds, that the street name change is really blamed, I think, widespread on the racism of the white community in Lansing. And I think what I hear you all saying is that you don't believe that that's true.
Well, no, actually, I kind of agree with you on that. People have separated those two and have forgotten that, because since then we've been out on the street, we have been leafleting people, we have had community meetings with different association groups in the community. And the people that we speak to are saying to us, now how did that happen? How did that get taken away? They are as confused or have lost the memory themselves.
Okay.
So I kind of agree with you on that.
Okay. You guys want to make any wrap-up statements?
Only that we're hoping for the best, and we'll see what happens next week. We are having a big fundraiser also next week.
And when does that happen?
That's Wednesday night, right on Cesar Chavez's birthday, March 31st. It's UAW Local 602. And we're hoping it's actually more of a coming out party, kind of our quinceanera for our committee. Because no one really knows who we are. We have been working diligently on this project, and no one really knows who we are. So this is kind of our invitation for people to come and talk to us and meet all the committee. The committee will be there.
Okay. All right. We want to thank everyone for listening to this podcast. For more information about the Chicano Development Center, please check out our website at chicanocenter.org. That's Chicano with an X. Or friend us on Facebook by searching under Chicano Development Center. Look for a new podcast in about 2 weeks and check out how to have speakers and organizers from the XDC come to your community. Until next time, la lucha sigue. This monthly podcast is brought to you by the Chicano Development Center, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to education and political empowerment through grassroots coalition building. We believe in the indigenous sovereignty of the Chicano people in the United States, and that true social and political change begins with the people. Our style of low-intensity organizing endeavors to build intentional communities within greater communities. The motivating force behind low-intensity organizing is to constantly challenge the status quo as to the treatment and economic status not only of Chicanos and other indigenous people, but of all oppressed people. At the Chicano Development Center, we believe that resistance begins with education, organization, and preparation. We believe that raza must take action on a regular basis, not just in times of crisis.
Of the best.